We ready, David? The peoples will come when the peoples will come. We shall begin. Huh? Yeah? We're good? Okay. We are continuing our study of the verses that correspond to the letter Yud, the smallest letter in the Hebrew alphabet, which has got a lot to teach us. Psalm 119. The verse, the pasuk we're going to study today is Ayin Hey, the 75th verse of the 119th Psalm. This will be our fourth class on the letter Yud. And here, King David demonstrates royal obedience in accepting the things that happen with faith. And of course, King David did not live an easy life. His entire life's story is filled with challenges and difficulties. He went through some very painful experiences, but he always kept his faith. And we're going to learn about that today. And every one of us in our own lives struggles with similar things. Hopefully not nearly as difficult as King David struggles, but we struggle with difficulty. And we learn from the psalmist how we should contend with life when things don't go the way we wanted or expected it to. Yodaiti, I know, Hashem, God, ki tzedek mishpatecha. I know that your judgments are always righteous. Ve'emuna inisoni. And that the afflictions that come my way, I know that this is rightfully so, or in other words, I can take it in good faith. You've done it in good faith. That's what David HaMelech says. That's a pretty powerful statement. When things go wrong, say, I know whatever happened is right, and I accept it in good faith. So let's take a look in Rashi. Ve'emuna inisoni. What does it mean that God did it in good faith? What does that mean? Literally, ve'emuna, and faith tormented me, or you faithfully brought me pain. So Rashi says, on a very simple, straightforward level, this is to say, bidin inisoni. Bidin literally means with judgment, but din means when things are, they follow a certain order. It's not inappropriate. It's not unfair. Everything is fair. David HaMelech says, I know that everything is fair. And I know that bi'emuna, not David HaMelech says, I have emuna. He's not saying that I have faith in Hashem. He's saying, I know. He's saying that you behaved faithfully, that you did what was right. So I want to point out right in the beginning that this verse is totally counterintuitive. If you will come to a person who suffers and say, how are you doing? And they may say, struggling, it's difficult. How's your faith? And they may say, I'm praying for faith. I'm trying to believe. I'm holding on desperately. I want to believe. We say it's a crisis of faith. King David never mentions a crisis of faith. He says, Yodaiti. I know with surety. The word faith is used in this pasuk, but the word faith here is used insofar as God is concerned. I know you acted faithfully. I know you acted in a trustworthy fashion. In the words of the Mitzudas David, he says, Hamishpatim sha'asita bi, the judgments that you rendered against me, the things you did to me, b'tzedekema, I know they're righteous. The word tzedek, which usually means idea of like a judge, right, or justice, it means it comes from the word right, righteous. Tzedakah, incidentally, does not mean charity. Tzedakah means to do what's right. What's right is that if I can put food on my table, and then some, and you can't put food on your table, what's right is that I should be helping you so that you can also put food on your table. It's the right thing to do. Tzedakah is not me, I'm a hero because I did, I'm so charitable. Tzedakah simply means I'm doing what's right. So here we say, David HaMelech says, Yodaiti, I know, ki tzedek mishpatecha, that your mishpatim, your judgments, they're right. They're right. And then he adds, V'emuno inisani. He adds that the suffering, the affliction that came my way, I know that it was done faithfully. So the Radak, the Mitzvot David, divides these two statements. He says, Tzedek mishpatecha, that I know that tzedek, that your mishpatecha, that your judgments are right. Shasisi, whatever you did, asisa, b'tzedekema. I know they're right. V'emuna inisani, he says, not only what happened, but the afflictions that I suffered, ubi emuna in onisa isi. You afflicted me in a trustworthy fashion, in good faith.
Does he trust in him with this affliction?
He doesn't trust in Hashem. He says Hashem's afflictions are trustworthy. Trustworthy. This really needs to be understood. This is tough stuff. How do we appreciate this? What does this mean to us? So let me take you now for a little journey into the Medrash Tilim. The Medrash Tilim explains this verse as follows. Quote, Kach Amar David, this is what King David said. Kol HaMishpatim, all of the judgments. Judgments are, you go to court, you lose the case. That's what a judgment is. All the judgments, he says. V'hayisurin, and all the suffering. Shehevesa alai, that you brought upon me. V'ha'inuyim, and the afflictions. Bi'emuna hevesa, you brought them in good faith. You brought them in good faith upon me. B'tzedek asisa, you did what was right. Eini koira tagar, I do not cry foul play. I do not say, hey God, how could you do this? How could God do such a thing to me? I don't say that. And David HaMelech says, "Ba'oisei shah," at that moment, "Yodaiti ki tzedek mishpatecha," I knew that what Hashem had done was right. So what does this refer to? The Medrash Tilim sends us off to the book of Shmuel, the book of Samuel, Shmuel Aleph, which chronicles the stories of the early kings, Shaul HaMelech, and then later David HaMelech. And in the 15th chapter of Shmuel Beis, the second book of Shmuel, there's the story of Avshalom, David HaMelech's son, his rebellion against his father. And David HaMelech is dethroned by his own son. And he leaves the city of Yerushalayim that he built in shame and disgrace. So what does he do? In verse 30, after describing how Avshalom came and did what he did and how David was dethroned and how David had to flee, verse 30 it says, V'David oyla v'ma'ale hazetim. He goes into Ma'ale hazetim, which the Mefarshim said this is the heights of Mount of Olives. Incidentally, there's a Jewish neighborhood called Ma'ale Zeitim today, which is just next to the Mount of Olives. So he goes on to the Mount of Olives, and what's he doing? What's he doing? Dethroned by your own son. He's described here as uboche. He's weeping. Rosh lo chafui, his head is hung in shame. Rashi says it means it's wrapped, kederech avelim. In those days, mourners used to, like, for example, today's day and age, mourners don't wear shoes or take off leather shoes. In those days, mourners used to wrap their heads so they would look mournful. They would have like these funny kind of hats or wrapping. It would make your eyes look mournful. So David HaMelech was wrapped. His head was wrapped in mourning. The Metzudas David says, mechusa bebeged, like a hoodie. He was wearing a hood over his head. And he was wearing a hood derech tzar, in a manner of exhibiting pain. Then David HaMelech is chafui. He's hoylech yachif. He's walking barefoot. Barefoot, Metzudasin says, he's got no shoes. He's shoeless. Shoeless, meblina alayim, says Metzudas David, derech tzar. He's walking in pain. The hood over his head in shame. He's hanging his head in shame. He's barefoot in pain. And then the pasuk says, v'chol ha'am ater sheritai du. Those, the loyalists, loyal to David, they went along with him also. Chafu, ish reisha. Each one had the same, hung his head in shame. V'olu oloi, they went onto the heights of Harazesim, ubocha, and they're crying. So why did they go onto the heights of Harazesim? Rabbeinu David Kimchi Radak says something fascinating. He says they went there, lehishtachav es l'Hashem. They went onto the Mount of Olives to prostrate themselves before God. to demonstrate their love and their loyalty to Hashem. Why did he go on to Har HaZaitim? So he says, because from Har HaZaitim you could see the place of the Beit HaMikdash. Right? If you know the typography. So, Har HaZaitim, right? You're in the Kotel, which is the western side. You look to the eastern side of Har HaMoriah, southeastern side, what do you see? Har HaZaitim. So from Har HaZaitim, you have a perfect view of Har HaMoriah. In fact, if you go into the southern edge of Har HaMoriah, you can actually see the way the mountains dip, and Har HaMoriah is just between the mountain summits dipping, which is described in the Medrash as Goiva Hasher, like the ox, like the shoulders of an ox, and it's supposed to be very beautiful. It just slightly dips, so that the Har HaBayit should be a little lower than the Etim spring, May Etim, and that would allow water pressure. So the water pressure would be open to wash the floor of the Beis HaMikdash. You know, I could have water towers today in these little towns. They pump the water up so there should be water pressure, even in the high parts of town. So in the Ein Etim, the Etim spring was a little bit higher, and the Har HaBayit was a drop lower. And you can see this perfectly from Har HaZaitim. So David HaMelech Radakses goes on to Har HaZaitim to look at the site of the Beis HaMikdash. And even though the Beis HaMikdash is not built until the days of Solomon, so what kind of Beis HaMikdash? David HaMelech wanted to go to the site of the Beis HaMikdash. Even though the site was not yet clear, he says, but nonetheless, he knew approximately where the Beis HaMikdash should be built, and that's where he wanted to see the Beis HaMikdash and express his loyalty to Hashem. Not his kvetching, not his complaining, not, how could you do this to me, God? You promised. I'm supposed to have royalty, longevity. How could this happen to me? What did I do wrong? He goes indeed to speak to Hashem, but it's to prostrate. It's to thank Hashem, it's to daven, it's not to kvetch and complain. It's to accept upon himself the judgment that Hashem has meted out to him.
Did he ever get his throne back from Absalom?
Yes, he did. And Absalom is slayed in the end. So Radak says another possibility is, we know that the Aron HaKodesh was in an ohel, was in a tent, and that tent would be visible from Har HaZaitim, because David HaMelech, remember, has been routed from his beloved city of Yerushalayim. So he has to go on the heights outside the city to be able to look down to see the Aron HaKodesh, the Holy Ark, where the Shechina proverbially at that time was resting. So the Medrash Tilim tells us, this is the meaning of David HaMelech going up to Har HaZaitim uboche. Yochel, you might think, shakara tagar, that he came to complain. He came to say, this is unfair. Or kina, he came to lament. No, le'omar ela mizmor. He said a mizmor. He sang a song to God. Do you know where this song appears? The song that David HaMelech composed in the nadir of his royal reign, the lowest moment, dethroned by his own son. It's the third psalm. The third psalm begins with the words, Mizmor leDavid bevarchoi mipnei Avshalom b'noi. A song of David HaMelech. Right? Go back in your Tehillim and look at the third psalm. What is the third psalm? You never thought about that when you open your Tehillim. Third psalm. When he fled from Avshalom. So David HaMelech fleeing from Avshalom, he's saying, he composed the song. What does he say? He says, I have all this tzaras, but he says, you are my shield. And he says, I cry out to you, and you respond to me. I will not fear. Arise, Hashem, help me. I place my trust in you and your blessings. An amazing psalm that's filled with faith. An amazing psalm that's filled with surety. An amazing psalm that's filled with thanksgiving. And that's when David HaMelech composed it. He took the passion, the feeling of pain that he felt at this moment, and he distilled it into a song for Hashem. Unbelievable. So this is the Medrash Tilim, this is the history of Psalm number 3. And now you know where Radak gets his ideas from. How does Radak say he knows that he's coming l'shtachavos? Simple. Radak knows the Medrash Tilim, and Radak knows that the Medrash Tilim sends us off to Psalm 3. And we know the content of Psalm 3. So Psalm 3 then has this powerful message. And he says, Yodaiti Hashem kitzedik mishpatecha. What did he say? Omar lei. Medrash Tilim finishes with the words, David HaMelech said to God, Riboini, my master, inisoni. You have afflicted me. Nechamni kishem shinisoni. Please now comfort me as you have afflicted me. Not how dare you. Not it's not fair. But a plea, a supplication. Now you shall please comfort me as you afflicted me. How incredible are these words? How meaningful and how practical, how relevant in our lives when we have low moments, when things don't go well, when we suffer and we're shocked. The Book of Tehillim is the book of every Jew. Because David HaMelech expressed himself on everybody's behalf. This is pure prophecy. And we're told that every single Yid can find his neshama in the Book of Tehillim. And you hear David HaMelech speak with such confidence. And he says, Yodaiti, not I believe, I know. I know ki tzedek mishpatecha. So the question that remains for us is, how does David HaMelech know this? How does David HaMelech know this? Why is he thankful? Why could it be right for him to suffer? What does that mean? So the Ibn Ezra, he says on Psalm 19, he says that in civil law, secular law, there are sometimes contradictions. There are laws that don't make sense. And, you know, it's the way it is because the people making the law are in one area or from one perspective, which doesn't take everything into context. And there's eventualities which can unfold and there's a problem. You're trying to uphold the law and the law becomes oxymoronic or contradictory. But with Hashem's system of judgment, it's always right. As the Medrash Laniado says, that everything that happens is exactly, the punishment always is exactly in perfect corollary with the crime or the misdeed. Everything is perfect. The fact that we don't see it, well, this is another story. But we believe it to the point that we know it, that it is so. The Malbim says an interesting thing. He says, the suffering, David HaMelech, what do you mean it's right? What could he know? So he says he knew that all of this was in order for David HaMelech to receive Hashem's reward and Hashem's promise. He said, in order to receive Hashem's reward and promise, so sometimes there is a need for cleansing. And the suffering becomes cleansing, and the cleansing allows for us to later be able to receive the reward. It's like, for example, there are times that because of our experiences, we develop a newfound sensitivity that we never had before. We have a newfound appreciation, a newfound awareness, but we never would have known it otherwise. We never would have reached this point. The only way we reach this point is because things went wrong. And after things went wrong, we'll be able to appreciate how right and how good this could have been. It couldn't have happened any other way.
Yeah, everything happens for a reason.
Right. Everything happens for a reason, but here we're saying the reasons are perfect. Exactly. There's nothing imperfect. This is the idea. So where did David HaMelech, it says he knows. What do you mean he knows? How do you know that?
I have a hard time with that. I can't understand. How did he know?
Oh, I didn't know. Okay, so let's take a look in the Radak. See what the Radak says. Because Rashi, Mitzudas, they don't really speak about this idea of Yodaiti. Yodaiti means knowledge. By the way, Ibn Ezra says this wasn't a one-time event. It's true. The Medrash Tilim sends us off to the story of Avshalom. David HaMelech had many, many sad events in his life. He had much grief. He had a lot of suffering. Things did not go easily for him. It was many times. That's the example. The Medrash Tilim gives us that example of how he went up to Har Zeitim and he praised Hashem despite the fact that Avshalom had just dethroned him and basically kicked him out of his own city. And now here he was, you know, walking barefoot like a mourner. But it happened many times. So Radak sets out to explain this idea of Yodaiti. Yodaiti means I know. And he says, what do you mean you know? How do you know? If you would have asked David HaMelech to explain it. Show me exactly and how this is right and what this is going to lead to. I think with fair certainty, David HaMelech would not be able to answer you. So how could he make that statement? Yodaiti, I know. Says Radak, Zehivanti v'yodaiti mitoratcha. I understood it and knew it from your Torah. Where does it say that in the Torah? It says Radak, because kasher ani meshiv elibi. When I take to heart, kimoishi inisani, the way you afflicted me, yadaiti, I know ki bi emuna inisani. God does not afflict us unnecessarily. God, there is nothing empty in life. Everything in life happens with a reason, even though we may not understand it. But we know that it happens with a reason. And how do we know this? Because in the end of Deuteronomy, in the famous poem of Moshe Rabbeinu, Shirat Moshe, which is known as Shirat Hazinu, in the Song of Hazinu, the 32nd chapter of Deuteronomy, over there, in verse 4, it says, Kel Emuna V'ein Ovel, a God who is trustworthy, a God in whom there is no iniquity. So this is the source, says Radak, where David HaMelech learned it from. So let's take a look at that actual verse. Let's take a look in Chumash Devarim. Chumash Devarim, chapter 32, verse 4, it does say that God is a God is trustworthy, Kel Emuna. What does it mean, Kel Emuna? Rashi in that verse says, L'shalim l'tzadikim tzidkatam le'olam haba, that God will recompense the righteous in the world to come. Now, of course, the emphasis here is in the world to come, because va'afalpi, and this is so, even though shema'acher est hagmulam, sometimes the compensation that's due, it comes slowly. It doesn't come right away. Soifoi la'amin es dvarav. In the end, it will come. Now, David HaMelech is a righteous person, not a wicked person. And that's why the words v'ein avel, there is no wrongdoing in Hashem, that refers, says Rashi, afle d'shoyim. God didn't make a mistake when things go well for the wicked. And you say, huh, you think God missed that one? When the wicked person won the lottery and life is great for them? That's not fair. God doesn't make any mistakes. The wicked seem to be laughing? Maybe. They may have done something righteous in life. And so, Mishalim schar tzidkosam be'olam hazeh, God will repay them in this world so that there is no outstanding bill in the other world. The other world is eternity. And this world is body firmal. So this is the meaning of Kel Emuna. Now, here we say, David HaMelech in Tehillim only speaks about V'emuna inisani. He doesn't say in avil. And the reason, I think, is obvious, because we're speaking here about righteousness, not the opposite. Or as the Sefarno puts it, Ne'mon, Hashem, is trustworthy that which He promised to our ancestors, He will do goodness for the children. Lehetiv. So the Ne'mon, the trustworthiness, is that the goodness will come. Ein avel, bahavie pur onus, he says, when negative stuff comes, there's no wrongdoing. There's no wrongdoing. So Sefarno kind of puts it together, but Rashi divides the two. Interestingly, the Ibn Ezra puts it this way. He says, Kel Emuna, what does it mean that God is trustworthy? La yitochen sheyasa avel. God can't make mistakes. God never does anything wrong. They famously once asked the Alter Rebbe, what would you would do if you were God? The Alter Rebbe said, if I was God, I'd do exactly what God did. So they said, you agree with what's happening in this world? You agree with all the pain and the suffering and the anguish, the affliction, the horrors? You agree with that? The Alter Rebbe said, I don't agree with it because I'm not God. It doesn't look right to me because I'm not God. But if we were God, we would do exactly what God does. In other words, God is perfect. And everything God does is right, even though we can't understand it. But we can know it. Sometimes you can know things even though you don't understand them. Sometimes you can know something, you can be certain about something, even though it makes no sense to me. Can't understand it, but we can know it. And that's the kind of thing that David HaMelech learned from the Torah. Because the Torah said that this is the way it is, so David HaMelech knows this is the way it is. The Baal HaTurim, he says, this idea of tzaddik v'yoshar means that's the words that precede Kel Emuna, tzaddik v'yoshar hu. He says, yesh loy loymer, that a person should say, yofa dantuni, God has judged well. What does this mean? This is a Gemara in Eiruvin. This means to say, baruch dayan ha'emet, and God forbid, when we, heaven forfend, shouldn't know, suffered the loss of a loved one, what do we say? Baruch Dayan HaEmet. We know that God is the true judge. We know what God does is right. After the burial, we say, Hatsur tamim pa'oloi. Everything God does is perfect. Kel emuna ve'in avel. He's a perfect God, and nothing could be wrong in what God does. It doesn't mean we don't have emotional questions. It doesn't mean we don't have emotional angst. So really, if you think about it, David HaMelech very, very carefully chose his words here. He doesn't refer to emotional angst. He refers to intellectual surety. He says, Yodaiti. Sometimes the mind can know what the heart cannot suffer. The Rebbe Rashab, at a certain point in his life, had terrible feelings of frustration. He felt very low. And this is despite the fact that he was in the zenith of his career and he was literally producing the most profound teachings of Hasidus. And he went to see Sigmund Freud to understand why was he having these terrible feelings? Why was he struggling so much within? And Sigmund Freud, who was not much of a believer, but definitely a big genius with an amazing insight into human nature, he said, Rabbiner, he said, Rabbi, your mind understands what your heart cannot suffer. And he says, this is creating what we call cognitive dissonance. Your mind knows it, but your heart can't suffer it. What the Rebbe Rashab understood, his profundity of Torah was so great that the heart couldn't take it. The emotions are the subjective reality of emotions, couldn't relate to the objective truth that he knew and understood. And so he advised the Friedrich Rebbe that he should see the student studying his Hasidus and assiduously immersing themselves in his studies, and this will give him a sense of satisfaction, which is also a very profound thing to say, because ultimately, what brings comfort to a tzaddik, when the tzaddik experiences these terrible yearnings for Hashem, when he sees he could affect somebody else's life. The Rebbe Rashab saw how he was changing the lives of the Talmidim, of the students. This brought him a sense of comfort, even though his mind understood, but his heart couldn't suffer. So in other words, the concept then of Baruch Dayan HaEmes here is we say it, we know it, even though sometimes we can't feel it. You know, it's a halacha that when somebody loses a loved one, before the burial, you don't make a blessing. You don't daven. Not everybody could be David HaMelech. Not everybody, it comes a time, it's called the onen, a person's in a state of meltdown. You can't bring yourself to emote before God. You can't bring yourself to, just not capable. Human being is still a human being. And it says, ein anino sela b'lev. Even a person about whom we say you don't sit shiva, there's no actual formal mourning, there's still aninot. Because aninot is a state of emotional meltdown. But David HaMelech says, I knew this. And the Gemara in Eruvin speaks about this there. It says that this is the idea, shematzdikem aleihem es hadin, that when the din, when judgment, we chas v'shalom, heaven forfend, suffer Hashem's judgment, we're matzdik. We justify it upon ourselves. And the Maharsha says there that means to say Baruch Dayan HaEmes. And we say, says the Maharsha, we say before Hashem, Yafa danta, Yafa zachita, Yafa chiyavta, Yafa tikanta. Everything God did is right. God has judged appropriately, decided appropriately, meted out appropriately. Everything is right. Gehenim l'rishoyim, Gan Eden l'tzadikim. Everything is right. So this is something I think we can know. You can understand it cerebrally. That does not mean you will relate to it emotionally.
Because you don't think that the things that are not going right are the bad things comes from Hashem.
Well, you know that it comes from Hashem because everything comes from Hashem.
Learning that it comes from Hashem is how you accept it.
How do you accept it? I think it's a tremendous question. I think this is the big challenge of life, especially when things don't go our way, when we don't lead a charmed life and we suffer and things are very painful and very difficult for us. So how do we deal with it? We deal with it by knowing cerebrally and intellectually that what Hashem did is right, even at a time when we cannot feel that way. The Rambam says a very interesting thing in the beginning of Hilchos Tainis. He says that a person has to know that everything that happens, happens for a reason. It doesn't mean post ipso facto that when something happens, you look back and you play prophet and say, I know this is why it happened. What it does mean is that when I'm in that situation, I have to say, if I will come closer to Hashem, I will earn Hashem's pardon. I have to attribute whatever's going on to some kind of misdeed. In other words, what's the Jewish response to suffering? It's not to say, stuff happens. The Rambam says something very interesting, which for many years I didn't understand. He says, a person who says, mikra nikris, a person who says, stuff happens. He says, derech achzorius. It's a cruel way to live. It's a manner of cruelty. I never understood this. When I was young, very young, I'm still very young, but when I was very, very young, I didn't understand it. What is it wrong with me? What's cruel about that? What, there are no compassionate atheists? There are no people who can't feel somebody else's pain? And they don't believe that everything happens by Hashgacha Pratis? What does it mean when he says cruel? And then later I started to understand. What he means is, it's a cruel way to go through life. Going through life and saying that human suffering has no meaning. Stuff happens. When you see human suffering, you see the depth of the agony and the affliction and the pain that people go through. And you can live with the sense that, well, stuff just happens. How cruel is that? You mean this world is a cruel place where there's no meaning to anything. But when you live with a sense of faith and knowledge that what Hashem does is for a reason. So even if it's very hard for us to suffer it, even if it's very painful, even if it breaks our hearts, but cerebrally, we know that there must be a reason to it. And more importantly, we know there is a purpose, even if we don't understand the purpose. The knowledge that there is a purpose, even if we can't appreciate it, is a comforting thing. It means that there is compassion in life. Things don't just happen. Human suffering isn't human suffering. Tough luck. No, it's not tough luck. And someday we'll know. And someday we'll appreciate. And someday we'll understand. And maybe we'll never even understand. And maybe we'll understand in the other world. But it wasn't for nothing. It accomplished something somewhere. It was meaningful on some level. Even if I never come to appreciate or know and understand it. That is a compassionate way to live. To know that everything happens for a reason and that something is accomplished. Do you know that one of the tactics of the infamous NKVD, KGB monsters who literally ripped apart people's lives. People say that Stalin killed more people than Hitler. Who will ever know? And the psychological torture they did, one of the things they used to do is harness people to a mill that usually is turned by an animal, but the mill was empty. To force a person to do back-breaking labor no reason whatsoever. And the story is told of how one fellow survived. He closed his eyes. He refused to look. And in his mind, he imagined that his suffering and his pain was producing flour. He convinced himself that it wasn't here. He couldn't see it, but it was producing flour. And in his mind's eye, he saw mountains of flour being produced through his labor. And then he imagined how these mountains of flour were being loaded onto trucks. And then he imagined how these mountains of flour that were sent to factories. And in factories, they were bagged. And in bagged, they were sent to bakeries. And he imagined in his mind's eye that he was feeding his family. And this is how he survived. And this is what Viktor Frankl speaks about in Man's Search for Meaning, where he says that the people who survived in the camps were not the people who had the biological needs met, right? Like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. No, he said. People who had more didn't necessarily survive. Who survived? The people who live with meaning. The people who live with meaning. It doesn't matter if the meaning was real or false. If it was real to this person, it enabled them to survive. Whether it was faith in Hashem or the belief that he had to live for a spouse or for a child that he would meet again someday. Whether the spouse's child had passed on, but he lived with the knowledge or the thought, the perceived knowledge that he needed to be there for them. That's what enabled them to live. Because the mind is the most powerful thing of all. And doing something for that life has no meaning is the most debilitating thing. Destroys a person. The cruelest way to live. So David HaMelech was not made of stone. He had a heart of flesh and blood. David HaMelech melts in his emotional expressions. He literally pours forth in prayer and supplication, in sadness, in melancholy sometimes, in yearning. It's the most electric book of Tehillim. There's so much emotion. There's so much raw and unbridled pain that spills across the verses, the poems, the pages of Tehillim. So David HaMelech didn't live with an indifference, chas v'shalom. He had the heart of the softest, most sensitive flesh and blood. But he had this knowledge that even when he couldn't feel it, the knowledge that it was right, that it was good, and that knowledge enabled him to overcome whatever came his way. He had absolute trust that if it says in the Torah, Kel Emunah, that God was Kel Emunah, that it was Ein Avel. And that's why he begins his words with Yodaiti, I know it. You feel it? Your opinion? I can't say that, but I know it. I know it if I can't explain it. I know it to be so. Yodaiti Hashem ki tzedek mishpatecha. Your mishpatim are righteous. The Emunah, I have perfect, so to speak, Emunah ini sani. You afflicted me, I have with perfect trustworthiness. I have no doubt about this. So we understand this, now all of a sudden, this verse starts to make a lot of sense. And we see where David HaMelech gets this from. With regard to this idea that David HaMelech says that Hashem is, everything is perfectly faithful, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah on page 55 gives us a fascinating explanation about this. And the Gemara says that there was a story of a man whose name was Zurin, who came to Rabbi Akiva. And he asked a question of Rabbi Akiva. He says, I agree with you. The idols, they're meaningless. They're powerless. But he says, you know, sometimes people come to an idol, they pray to the idol, and things go well. The prayers are answered. How could that be? I know it's meaningless too. He says, I don't believe in the idols. But why would God do that? So Rabbi Akiva said like this. He said, let me give you a metaphor. There was those who were sent on a mission. Sent on a mission. Hashem sends them a mission to bring things to people. These malachim, if you will, are the conventional envelopes through which people get the download. Sometimes good, and sometimes not overtly good. But they're always with faith, perfect faithfulness. And he said that there was a story of a person who everybody trusted. Everybody trusted him. And there was one person who, despite the fact that everybody trusted this person and nobody ever made him sign for anything, people would give him literally their life savings. They trusted this person. Nobody ever made a document. Nobody ever required witnesses. Everybody always trusted him. And there was one person in town who, despite the fact that everybody knew they were so trustworthy, would always require witnesses. It would always require documentation. And one time, he came and brought something with no documentation and no witnesses. So the story goes, the honest man's wife said, let's fix his wagon. He always said he doesn't trust us. Let him come back and not find what he wants, because this time he didn't make documentation. And the honest man said to his wife, just because he suspects us, we should be dishonest. We have to be honest. We have to be honest. The fact that he does or doesn't suspect us doesn't change the fact that we have to be straight up. So Rabbi Akiva said, this is the story of Hashem is emunah ve'novel. Everything God is on perfect faith. Hashem sees this person walking into a house of idolatry. He's supposed to win the lottery in an hour. Unfortunately, he walks into the idol, a house of idols, and he prays to the idols, I should win the lottery. He doesn't know he's destined to win the lottery. So Rabbi Akiva says, so now Hashem should take away what's coming him. It's coming. You want to call it a coincidence? Even though there are no coincidences. You want to call it a tragic, misguided approach? He's misguided. But what Hashem says is coming is coming. And sometimes it may look funny. Many years ago, I was trying to get a person to keep Shabbat. And it was a struggle with this. And he went to work and he said that he worked on Shabbat and he gave tzedakah and he made exactly the amount he gave to tzedakah. So he said, you see, Hashem is happy with me. Because I gave tzedakah and he gave back exactly the amount. I said, that's not possible. He said, well, I'm showing you, it's so compelling. I said, listen, why Hashem did that, I don't know. Maybe it's an assign. Maybe he's testing you. But it cannot be that Hashem says in his Torah, don't do something, and he's happy that you did it. It can't be such a thing. You can't make your own calculations. The calculations of Hashem will never know. So what can we be certain of? I can be certain that there is a God, and that he wants me to keep the Torah. Do you understand how things are? No, I don't understand. Do you? I don't know. But I can be certain. I can know it. And that's what David HaMelech says, Yadaiti. I know. I know emuna in yisani. It's perfectly trustworthy. Whatever's supposed to happen is happening exactly as it's supposed to happen. And the fact that it looks to me, how could it be? I just did this and this good thing and something happened. There was once a man who came to the Rebbe. And he said to the Rebbe, how can I believe in God? He said, my family was very, very pious and observant. Everybody in my family was pious, he said. My parents, my siblings, they were all pious. They all did everything Hashem wanted. I, he said, was the rebel. I was the black sheep. I violated the Torah from an early age. I brought tremendous angst to my parents. He says, all my family, every single one, died in the Holocaust. And I survived. If there is a God, why did I survive? Why didn't they survive? I don't deserve to survive if there's a God. I should have been punished. What did they do wrong? It's a very powerful question. So purportedly, the Rebbe said to him as such, they were destined to live a certain amount of time. That was the years Hashem gave them. Nothing could have changed that. You were destined to live a certain amount of time. It doesn't mean that there's no tzedek, there's no righteousness. It doesn't mean there's no mishpat. It's not for us to understand why Hashem gave one person 40 years, one person 60 years, one person 90 years. We don't understand that necessarily. We can't always change that. Sometimes a person is born with a certain amount of time, nothing can change it. What we can change is how we utilize that time, what we do with the time that Hashem gives us. As it says, Yomim Yitzaru, David HaMelech says, Hashem creates days, V'loy Echad, and we should fill those days with loyalty to Hashem. Bring Hashem Echad, bring oneness to Hashem. That's what we should do. But a person gets a certain amount of days. You can only do so many mitzvahs in so many days because this is the time you get. In other words, as follows. The Rebbe said to him, it's true what you're saying is a good question. But you're saying it's based on a faulty premise. And the faulty premise is that we were all given the same possibilities. They were righteous, I wasn't. They got rewarded, I didn't. The Rebbe said, you don't know about it, but it happens to be they clearly got a certain amount of years to live. You had more time to live. And it's not about the reward of punishment, which incidentally doesn't mean that doing right things can't earn you more years, sometimes. It doesn't mean that doing mitzvahs can't change a decree, a bad decree. Torah says sometimes it could. We don't always know.
But couldn't the answer be like an afterlife? Like if they're taken early, maybe they do better in the afterlife than a wicked person.
The answer could be anything. I'm telling you what purportedly the Rebbe answered to this person. Mm-hmm. So in other words, they didn't even go to the business of the afterlife or you don't know what reward or punishment is. The person was given a certain amount of time. Not always can we change that. We do believe that mitzvahs earn us Hashem's blessings. We do believe that Averis Chas V'Shalom will block Hashem's blessings. We believe that. It's true. It doesn't make it untrue because at a certain time, in a certain place, it doesn't seem to be that way. The Rebbe once said, imagine if there's a long, long life, many, many, many years, but you get to see one frame, just one, like a few pixels, just a few frames, right? Like think of a film that has tens of thousands of frames, hundreds of thousands, millions of frames, and you get to see just a few of those frames. And in those few frames, the person is screaming in pain. So what would you say? Because that's all you saw. What would you say? They live a life of horror and pain. It was the life they live. But actually, it's not true. Maybe the few moments you saw was the moment that a woman was giving birth. And she was screaming in pain. And you say, this woman had a horrible life. How do you know? What do you mean, I saw? I saw all, what did you see? All you saw is that moment when she was giving birth and she was screaming in pain. But a life that was filled with goodness and the child that she had and the nachas, you didn't see that. But we have a very limited perspective. We see only a few frames. We see only a few pixels. So for us to make judgments or conclusions based on the few pixels we see or the few frames that are available to us is foolhardy. So we can know that what Hashem does is right, in as much as it's very painful for us. It's very hard for us to go through life. Sometimes, chas v'shalom, people suffer, and it's so difficult, and it's so painful, and they live with so much heartache. But that doesn't mean we can't know that what Hashem does is right. And incidentally, when you see this person suffering, the right thing to say is not pat them on the back. It's okay. Everything Hashem does is good. What should you do? I'm sorry. I feel your pain. I'm trying to feel your pain. I have no words to say. Can I help? Or don't even ask. Just do something. Many years ago, I read a story, a short story in the Reader's Digest, which I never forgot. And I was talking to a colleague of mine a few years ago. And amazingly, he read the same short story, and it made such an impact on him, he never forgot it either. And the story is about this family that tragically loses their father at a very young age. And, you know, different neighbors come, and older neighbors come and say, we're so sorry, let us know if there's anything we could do. And one neighbor comes, doesn't say a word. He says, walks in and says, can you please give me your shoes? He says, shoes? Yeah, please give me your shoes. He collects everybody in shoes. It's like a big family. And he goes into the garage, and he spends the next 2 hours polishing everybody's shoes. Mm-hmm. And then he takes the polished shoes and puts them at the front door and leaves. And they have this funeral the next day. It's not a Jewish story. And they go to the house of worship. And it's not like, you know, Yidden are going to Shul every Shabbos. This is their dress shoes, and nobody's dress shoes were up to snuff. And they had to go to a funeral. You know, and they sit in the church dressed nicely with the nicest shoes. That's civilization. That's how they go to a funeral, wearing their finest. For Yidden, it's different. That's how they do it. And nobody would have thought that the shoes were all scuffed. Nobody's shoes were polished. And what this neighbor did, he simply went, did something. He thought to himself, what can I do? Not what can I say. Everybody comes and says, I'm very sorry. Call me if you need anything. Does anybody ever call anybody when somebody says, call me if you need anything? Other people say that stupid thing. We don't know what to say, so we say stupid things. But the truth is, we'd be far more effective if we didn't say things. Instead, we just did something. Somebody's suffering, do something. Bring over a meal. Say, is there anybody who needs to be picked up from the airport? Do something. So this is the right response for us, is not to say, it's okay. God knows what he's doing. In fact, that's the worst thing you could say. And according to the halacha, the Shulchan Aruch says, one who says that violates the mitzvah of einoas devarim, which means to take advantage of somebody, exploit them, and hurt them with painful words, with barbed words, like Job's friends did to him, when they said, started to justify what happened to him. Yirasa kisla secha, they said, you weren't religious enough. That's why this happens to you. So, but David HaMelech says, yodaiti, I know. This pasuk of Tillim is not telling you what to tell somebody else. This verse of Tillim is telling us what we must know. We must know that what Hashem does is perfect. We must know this. And if we can't feel it, at least we must know it. And when we know it, then this is what Avodas Hashem, this is what serving Hashem is all about. And I want to finish with an idea which is a little bit less emotional and perhaps on a broader sense, which speaks about the notion of not just that, you know, what Hashem does is right, and therefore if we must know what Hashem does, as the Mizmor LeSeder and the Maharash Laniado tell us based on the Gemara in Meseches Avodah Zarah. But here's something that the Rebbe writes to somebody in a letter. We know there are three kinds of mitzvahs. The mitzvahs that are called Mishpatim, these are mitzvahs that are rational, easy to understand. There are mitzvahs that are called edut, which comes from the word aid, or witness, or testimony. And then there are mitzvahs that are called chukim, which are mitzvahs that we don't really understand. Mitzvahs that defy rhyme, reason, or logic. Now, one could argue that the most religious mitzvahs are not the mishpatim, like do not murder, be kind and compassionate, be charitable, be respectful to your parents. It's not so religious. There's lots of atheists that are kind and compassionate, that are sensitive, that don't kill, that don't harm or maim, that don't steal. So it's not a religious thing. That's a societal thing, a menschlich thing. How about edut? How about testimonies? How about coming to a Pesach Seder? How about eating matzah and saying, we were the nation that left Egypt? It's not so religious. I know a lot of people that are profoundly irreligious, or so they claim, and they go through the motions of what they call its culture, tradition. You all know tradition. Tradition. So say you believe it, God is nachas. God, nachas. I don't even know if God knows who I am. So what are you doing this for? Tradition. Edut is tradition. Traditions are important. We have to respect tradition. Why? Well, you know, if you don't know where you came from, if you don't have a sense of history, you don't have a sense of destiny. It's not so religious. But when somebody performs a mitzvah, which is clearly identified as a chok, a mitzvah that's identified as a statute, this is the kinds of mitzvahs we don't understand. The archetypal paradigm, of course, is the parah adumah, right? The red heifer, the ashes that are mixed with the water, which is rife with contradiction. Starting with the notion that the very same agent which can make purity can cause impurity. Right? It's either it's a cleansing agent or it's an agent that soils. What is it? Nobody says, I got filthy. I touched the soap. I got filthy from the soap. If you touch soap, you get clean. Soap cleanses. How could this be both pure and impure at the same time? It's a paradox. But for that matter, the reason that we can't wear woolen linen, does that really make sense? What does God care if I have woolen linen? I have a little linen thread going through my wool suit. What difference does it make to God? Can't eat pork. Why can't I eat pork? I can eat a cow, but I can't eat a pig. What's the difference? Can't eat bus of a chalav. Can't eat milk. Why not? These things don't have rhyme and reason per se. A person doesn't do that because of religious observance. That's an act of real, true obedience. Now, David HaMelech here, in verse 75 of chapter 119, when he says, Yadaiti Hashem ki tzedek mishpatecha, if he wanted to say, I know, even though I don't understand, I know, even though I can't feel it, I really know, if you really want to know, which mitzvah should he have said it about? About mishpatecha or about chukecha? Which would be the greater expression of faith? Think about it. How would David HaMelech demonstrate his absolute conviction in God when he says, I know that your chukim are right, or I know your mishpatim are right? Chukim. That would be a real statement. But instead he says, Yadaiti, I know, Yadaiti Hashem ki tzedek mishpatecha. Why doesn't it say chukecha? Now, inasmuch as this is not the literal meaning of the verse, and that's not what the verse is talking about, but nonetheless, in Torah, everything has to make sense on many levels. So if we use a word mishpatecha, which is your judgments, it could easily have said chukecha. It would not detract from the literal meaning, but it would give us a deeper appreciation as to what Judaism is all about. When it came time to receive the Torah, God offers it to us, the Jewish people. What did we say? Famously, we said, Naaseh v'nishma. We will obey, we will do, and we will listen, we will try to learn and understand. And the Gemara makes a lot of hay out of the fact that we didn't just say, we will obey and do. And listen. We didn't just say we would do both, but rather, the Gemara says, B'sha'a shehekdimu naisa l'nishma. At the moment they first talked about obedience, and then afterwards talked about trying to understand, that made such an impact. Because obedience is a given. It's a given. Of course you're going to be obedient. In the end of the day, this is God's show, not our show. We can't tell God what he should like or how we should worship him. It makes no sense in any religious context for a person to say, I'll worship God as long as I like it and it feels good for me. You're not worshiping God, you're worshiping yourself then. It's just a subtle form of idolatry. But the fact is, a person might say in religion, I understand not, I cannot fathom. It's an act of love or obedience. Submission, I submit to God. There are certain faith systems, the name of the faith system is submission. Submit. Judaism is not about submission only. Judaism is about asking questions. Judaism wants us to understand, not just submit, not just obey, but also to appreciate, to understand, to learn. which to many people from their faith perspective is an oxymoron. It's, what are you asking questions? Right? And certain people will come from a faith system where questions were discouraged.
And said, in trouble.
No. And said, I can't believe it. Here, I'm allowed to ask questions. Of course you're allowed to ask questions. What are we not allowed to do? Draw our own conclusions. But you can ask as many questions as you want. And questions are encouraged, not discouraged. And in certain faith systems, knowledge is discouraged. Keep the masses in the dark so that they don't rebel. Our mission, teach everybody as much Torah as you can. But if you give them a little knowledge, it'll be dangerous. And they'll ask questions and they'll come to... So we have to try to reiterate and emphasize that we shouldn't be coming to conclusions, and that in the end, when you have to make a decision, you go to an expert. But study, everybody should study. So Judaism has almost like a contradiction in terms, in that we place emphasis on study, and at the same time, we place tremendous emphasis on obedience. But you might say, study, 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 and then regardless of your conclusion, in the end, you have to obey also. Here we say, b'shar shehikdimu. The first thing we said is obedience, which sounds like it's all about obedience. They said, no, but after the obedience, we're going to go learn too. That's like a contradiction. If learning is important, first learn, and then later on you'll obey, whether you understand or not. Here we say, no, first is obedience. And that's what earned us Hashem's love. When we said, b'shar shehikdimu, when we said first, naisa, and then nishma, the angels went crazy. They said, look at this nation. Look at this nation. They said, first we're going to obey. We want to understand it, but first we're going to obey. So the question now becomes, in which mitzvah does the obeying express itself? You say, well, in the chukim, the mitzvahs which can't be understood, because that's obedience. Why are you doing this mitzvah? You're ritually impure, you're going to a dirty mikveh, that makes no sense. I'm perfectly clean, but ritually impure. I'm going to a physically dirty mikveh, not that mikvehs are dirty, and they shouldn't be, but in case it would be. And you come up here, it doesn't make any sense. You're right, it doesn't make sense. So why do I do it? Obedience. How about the mitzvahs I can understand? Must I obey those too? Or that I understand? The Rebbe says that the deepest and most profound expression of obedience is when you do that which you understand, not because you understand it, but rather because you obey it. That's the really deep and profound expression of commitment to Hashem. And so David HaMelech says, yeah, yodaiti. Yadaiti mishpatecha, tzedek mishpatecha. I may think they're right for one reason or another, but ultimately I know it's right, not because of what I think, not because of what I understand. I know it's right because I take it on faith. So why should we be respectful to our parents? Because it makes sense to us? Because that's what a mensch should do? No. We should be respectful to our parents because that's what Hashem says we should do. I should be kind to somebody else because I'm kind-hearted? No. I should be kind to somebody because the Torah says I should be kind to somebody. Today is Yud Beis Tammuz. It's the birth date of the Friedrich Rebbe, the Chag HaGaula, the day that he was released from incarceration formally. It's a Yom Tov by Chassidim. So I remember one year instructed that in all the summer camps, in all the schools, that we should all review a portion of a Maimer, of a Chassidic Biskos and a Friedrich Rebbe. We should all commit two lines, two sentences to memory. So obviously we all did it. And what were the two sentences? V'zehu kol hachsidus. This, wrote the Friedrich Rebbe, is the whole purpose of chassidus. L'shanais teva midosav. To change the nature of our natural characteristics. Loi rak l'shanais midosav hativim. Not only to change our natural inclinations and instincts, Ella, rather, l'shanes teva midosav, to change the nature of our instincts. What does this mean? A person could say, I'm not kind. Kindheartedness doesn't come easy for me. So what should I do? Oh, you're not kind, and be mean. We wouldn't say that. We would say the right thing is to be kind. But I'm not kind. Work on it. Make it till you fake it. Do kindness anyway. Change your nature. But I'm selfish by nature. So, overcome your nature. I'm patienceless by nature. I'm impetuous and angry by nature. Overcome your nature. Become patient. Become easygoing. work on pulling it together instead of flipping out. That means l'shanais midosef hativim. That means to change our natures. And none of us are created perfect. All of us are created with weaknesses in our nature. And our job, our mission from Hashem, is not to make a parade about our weaknesses, but to work on trying to change our weaknesses. The Friedrich Rebbe said that's not what Chassidus wants. Chassidus wants something far more profound. L'irak l'shanais midosef hativim. Not only to change the midos, the natural inclinations, Ella, rather, l'shanes teva midosov, to change the nature of your mida, the nature of your behavior. Which means, suppose I'm generous by nature. My generosity is in, it expresses itself, I'm ready to give 10% of my earnings, open-heartedly. So what should I do? I should give 11% of my earnings. Because that percentage is when I change my nature. Let's say I'm a studious person. I enjoy studying. So then I should study not because I am a studious person and enjoy studying, but I should study because that's what Hashem wants me to do. You understand the subtlety? The small difference? It's a small, gigantic difference. And so that's the meaning, says the Rebbe, going back to our pasuk here, of Yadaiti Hatzem Hashem Ki Tzedek Mishpatecha. I have to know that Hashem's mishpatim are right. Why? Because Hashem says. Because ve'emuna. Because it's, everything is trustworthy. Even the things that make sense to me, I have to be ready to do, not because they make sense to me, but rather because Avi Shabashamayim, because my Father in Heaven has commanded me to do this. And this, my dear friends, is some of the meaning, depth, and profundity that was encoded into this pithy little verse, 75 of chapter 119. Wow. L'chaim.
I just wish that to him was...